Welcome to the Maria Heller Show, the internet's original podcast. Since the year 2000, always ahead of the curve, always on your side. A true warrior for truth and justice, Maria and her guests leave nothing out, and no one is off limits. There is only one truth, the rest is lies. Sit back, enjoy the education with a true daughter of Mother Earth. Sharp New York wit, spiritual knowing, and a very dry sense of humor, Maria will dissect the news and lies to make it all palatable. Education is power. Maria delivers rapid-fire truth like no one else can. Here she is, the mouth that roars, the legendary Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to The Bigger Picture. And there's a lot going on in the bigger picture besides the horrific pictures we're getting every day. So I want to say good morning to my co-host, Michael Rakia. If you're not familiar with Michael's work, I've sent so many people to his site. Get over to josephspeaks.com. I have a live link here for that. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Maria. How are you?
Well, I'm on the mend as usual.
Yes,
if it ain't one, you remember that old song, if it ain't one thing, it's another? And I have to tell you, for the past year and a half, I have gone from one weird thing to the other physically. And every time I get tested or go to a doctor, they tell me everything is perfect. So I have to come to the conclusion that we're under attack. Because, you know, talking to you before the show and, you know, through the past year and a half, it seems you and I have been experiencing the same symptoms on different sides of the world in tandem. I mean, it's crazy because I told you this morning about the problem I was having with my foot, and you told me you're having the same problem.
That's absolutely right. And you also said that as soon as you get rid of one thing, something else takes its place.
Right.
And that's been the case with me for a good few months now.
Well, I've got it down to a year and a half so far. And I'm like, what the hell is this? You know, and I, you know, hadn't shared this with my audience before. But about 3 weeks ago, I just woke up and my foot was totally swollen. The pain was excruciating. Couldn't stand on it. Went to the urgent care, went to the doctor, and they tell me it was plantar fasciitis, which I had never heard of. And the doctor's opinion was, you know, just take an anti-inflammatory, which was useless. So I did my YouTube and Google homework and figured out a million ways to alleviate the pain. And, you know, here it is a few weeks later, and I've got that pretty much 80% under control, but it's like, what's going on here? I had the foot x-rayed, nothing, no spurs, no nothing to actually cause it. And then this morning you tell me you're having a problem with your feet.
Yes, I think it's a symbolic of, as you said earlier when we were chatting before the show, of moving forwards. And it's something that, if it took a hold, would prevent us from moving forwards. And I think, as we both know, the more you work in this area, the more the field of human consciousness that is set to negative doesn't want you to work in this area. And it may not be a specific attack from a specific person aimed at you. It could be aimed at all light workers. And it manifests itself in the physical, because that's where it originates. It originates in denser matter, in denser thought. And tries to prevent us from what we're doing. But we're not having any of that.
No. Listen, I sat here doing my show with my foot in a bucket of ice water.
Oh, my goodness.
So I still got it done. It's like I still got it done even with split migraines. Because to me, yes. If you give in and you stop, then they got what they wanted.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I mean, obviously the darkness is going wild on this planet right now with threats of war, with nuclear danger, with psychopathic dictators, you know, taking over every country on Earth, and especially here in America. You know, people, Americans attacking Americans, you know, Nazis in the street. I mean, I know this is the darkness's last chance. They know the field is closing. They have no way out. But it does affect us, and it's affecting all of us. And, you know, listen, I'd like to hear from my listeners if they've been experiencing similar physical things.
Yes, yes. And of course, we've got to keep on keeping on. As the old adage says, there is more of a need for light at this time than there has been for thousands of years. And we can still, I know it feels as though we can't, but we can still turn things around. But we need to work, each of us, daily. We need to have the attitude that we're bringing light into the world. We need to have the attitude that this is a spiritual planet, and we are re-establishing that light on this planet, and we are re-establishing the true identity of people by sending enough light to them for them to realize who they truly are, and that we're turning things around. And it's work, and it's war. It's light versus darkness, but the light will win if enough of us send that light out on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing, and it truly is a war, and people don't get that. You know, I knew many years ago that there was a war on, ongoing war here for the human soul.
Yes.
And now it's just amped up because they know they're out of time.
Yeah.
So, you know, even when I did post some things yesterday, that as bad as things look, this we should be happy because it's almost over. You know, to me, it's like, when's it going to be over, Lord? You know, I was thinking, sitting outside this morning, you know, my Aunt Mary died this year, and she was like 94 years old. And her last words were, "I'm tired." Okay. And she was 94. I mean, she had, that's decades on me. And I can tell you, I sat out there thinking, I understand, you know. I understand that feeling of being tired, and I think it's tired on a soul level.
Yes, yes. Again, we are, by sending out the light, even if we don't turn things around, in the event that we don't turn things around, we're creating the right atmosphere for hundreds, thousands, perhaps millions of souls to realize who they are and to go into the next stage of their existence with the right attitude. One, not wanting to come back.
Right.
And two, realizing that they are more than flesh and blood. And that's hugely important. So I think if some of your listeners have difficulty in maintaining their light sending and in thinking that they're changing things.
Right.
Yes, they are still changing things. Even if the entire world doesn't change, there are pockets of resistance, as it were. There are people who are affected by that light. Mm-hmm. There are people who are changed by that light. There are souls that are saved by that light. And so it is essential, despite what the physical world tells us, to keep on keeping on, to keep on sending out the light.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it reminds me of your book, Your Life After Death, which I got to tell you, is still one of my all-time favorites. That everything we do here on our own as individuals helps determine where we're allowed or where we're able to go after this. So when I tell people I do what I do, and yes, my audience benefits, but I truly do it for myself. You know, I want to leave here saying I did everything I knew how to do.
Yes, there is a compulsion, isn't there? Once you put your feet on this path, there's a compulsion to do what we're doing. And you can't stop. In conscience, you can't stop. There is so much at stake. You have to keep going. And the people who are giving out the light, that are listening to this show, please keep going. You are making a difference. And as Maria's just said, you are raising your own vibrations by doing so. You can only harmonize when you go to the spiritual realms with the level that you have attained via your personal vibration. And the amount of light and the amount of love that we put into what we do and that we transmit to other people elevates our vibration. So that we, in effect, as we send out that love, we lift ourselves up, literally, through the spiritual spheres to the sphere at which we with which we resonate. We sort of take shortcuts that further our journey back into the spiritual spheres. So it's very important for ourselves and for others to elevate ourselves on a daily basis, because that's exactly what we're doing once we leave here. We will have elevated ourselves to a certain level of understanding and a certain level of existence.
Exactly. Well, I think there's a lot of people here that are going to find themselves in a very weird place after this. And I don't want to be there. You know, I remember one thing that stood out in your book, I don't know why, I just found it, it just hit me really hard, was where you said if you spent your life as a couch potato, you're going to wake up in a room with a whole lot of other couch potatoes. And who knows how long you'll spend your time there before you realize that's not real.
Yes, you'll continue with your perception of existence. If your perception of existence is the 9-to-5 existence, is the existence with the holiday twice a year and visiting the relatives and acquiring the new car and acquiring the next vacation, that's what you will expect if you haven't investigated spirituality. And so you create what you expect. You can only operate within the level of vibration that you've created around you and within you. And so you will expect those things, and you will be happy with those things for a time, because they are what you're used to. But eventually, you'll run out of patience with them, and you'll have to seek something else. Now, what do you seek if you haven't investigated life after death? If you haven't investigated or acknowledged spirituality, what do you seek? Mm-hmm. And the unfortunate answer is that a lot of us seek to come back here.
Right.
So the life that has been so challenging, so painful, so sorrowful, so depressing for us, is the life that we choose because we haven't investigated or invested time in anything else. That's the life that we choose to come back to.
Right, not because believing you have any options.
That's all we know.
Mm-hmm.
It's all we know. So it's important that we investigate what else exists, that we make up our own minds about it, but that we investigate spirituality. We investigate life after death. We look at the evidence. We investigate from within via meditation to see what is right for us and what is wrong for us. And we prepare ourselves for the next stage. We're not here for long. We're only here for a few years, and it goes very, very quickly. And so inevitably we get to that next step. What are we going to do with that next step? Are we going to move onwards into bliss and into enlightenment? Or are we going to come back here for another ride on the merry-go-round?
Like I told you a million times, if I could tattoo on the inside of my eyelids, never come back, I would do it. And when I tell people that, when I tell people that, go ahead, I'm sorry.
It should be on gravestones, Maria.
I know.
Every time you visit a cemetery, it is reflected back at you from, you know, 1,000 gravestones.
That's a good idea.
Don't come back. Remember not to come back.
I know. I wish sometimes you were next to me when I'm talking to people and I tell them, don't ever come back. Remember to never come back. And the look on their faces when I tell them that reincarnation is a trap, and how stunned they are.
Yes. And not only is it a trap, but it is a choice. This is what a lot of cultures don't realize, that reincarnation is a choice. Nobody is forcing you to come back here. You bring yourself back here. As we've said in many shows, there is a constant throughout the universe, and that constant is free will. We don't have to do anything we don't want to do. Now, free will can't just operate in the rest of the universe and not where reincarnation is concerned. Reincarnation operates under the same universal, divine, if you like, law.
Mm-hmm.
So there is free will where reincarnation is concerned. And reincarnation does exist, but it exists because so many of us say, this is what I'm used to, this is what I'm coming back into.
Right.
This is what I want to try again, to get right this time. But you won't get it right.
Right.
life is not a TV show. There isn't a beginning, a middle, and an end to each life as an adventure here. And we shouldn't expect it to work in that way.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't a happily ever after, except that we get back to where we came from.
Right.
Except that we get back to our spiritual life and move onwards through the cleansing realms, through the spirit realms, and into infinity.
Right. Kind of makes you wonder whether reincarnation exists on other planets or other universes.
As Joseph explains it, as far as he knows, according to his knowledge and his great age with regard to how long he's been in the spiritual realms, and age is a relative term, of course, according to his great experience, I should say, we're the only ones that have taken this particular trip. Hmm. We're the only ones that have cut ourselves off from divinity consciously, not subconsciously, not at core. We're the only ones who have forgotten who we are. And in other spheres of experience in a physical universe, souls, spirits, angels, for that's what we are, actually move through those spheres to gain experience from them in full knowledge that they may be in physicality, but they are also spiritual beings. In full knowledge that when they have gained all the experience that they can from moving through a particular sphere, by that I mean a particular planet, then they go back to the spiritual realm, the angelic realm, and then they decide what other worlds to visit in order to gain more experience, to bring more experience to and elevate the divine, to elevate everything, because we are all linked together, of course, mm-hmm. all part of the same thing.
Right. Right. Well, you know, there seems to be a lot of people now, I mean, you know, maybe it's not as unusual as I think, but it just seems to me that there's a lot of people that are tired and literally want to go home. You see how many people are just dying just suddenly. Do you think that the more enlightened you are, the more you really want to go home?
I think the more enlightened you are, the more alienated you feel living in this world. I think you find that you become more and more out of step on a physical level with the way that other people choose to live. And that's not a judgment on your part. It's simply that you see things from core in a different way than other people do. And it alienates you because you see that the trends of society are not for you. The way that most people live is not for you. You have a knowledge there that begins to pull at you, and you want that way of life. I think people are getting tired, and the reason they're getting tired is that the world, as we've said in many shows, is living within a field of human consciousness. And that field of human consciousness is, and has been for millennia, set to negative. And so we are drawing, rather than drawing on God power from within our hearts, from within our cores, we are drawing from this finite amount of negative energy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you pour water into a bowl, and then you take the water out with a teaspoon, eventually that water has gone.
Right.
You've drawn out of that well of water all the water that's there. And that's what's happening at the moment, because we are not replacing field energy with God energy. If we were all to, you know, if every human being across this, around this globe, were to sit tonight and to transmit light into the field, and was to let go of their negative tendencies, let go of their violent tendencies, let go of their need to judge, let go of their lust for power, this world would change instantly.
Right.
And tomorrow morning we'd wake up and we wouldn't be tired. Nor would we, those of us who are spiritually seeking, nor would we find this place such an awful place, because we would have changed it. We would have changed it back into what it originally was. And it's that simple, and it's that difficult.
Mm-hmm.
It's that simple because that's the only way to change things here. And it's that difficult because not many people believe in it.
Right, exactly. Well, it is what it is. You know, listen, what you're talking about are things that I've known since I was a child. You know, that I just knew, you know, I think I was like 4 or 5, that this isn't the way we're supposed to be living. And interesting, your choice of words earlier, because I had that another epiphany on my 30th birthday, where the first thing I said when I woke up was, you know, where's my life? You know, I said, I've lived the first 30 years of my life for everybody else. And I actually said out loud, from now on, I'm not doing anything I don't want to do. And it's obviously the same way when you're not in a body. You don't have to do anything you don't want to do. And I think that a lot of the system here has people convinced that they have to do things they don't want to do.
Yes, we're serving the field, aren't we? We are set to serve the field. We're set to serve. From the moment we go to school, we are taught to be a good little part of society. Mm-hmm. We're not taught to question society. We are taught to conform to society. We are taught to respect certain societal norms, in that we are taught that we are going to get sick and we will need doctors. We are taught that we're going to get old and we will need care. We're taught that we, through society, have to work to attain a certain level of power and a certain level of finances. And we buy into all this. We've no choice. We're taken as children and programmed to react to the field in exactly the way the field wants us to react to it. In other words, to be dependent on it. There's nothing in many of our schools that addresses our spirituality. I'm not talking about religion. I'm talking about spirituality.
Right.
There's nothing that acknowledges that we are greater than the thin layer of society that we've placed around this globe. There's nothing that acknowledges that we are creative beings. And there's nothing that acknowledges quiet. We live opposite a school, and the noise is deafening.
Mm.
And the children are not given any opportunity to be peaceful, to be silent. They are not taught that in silence there is great spiritual power. There is just noise, there is just activity, there is just speed. And I see those poor children being prepared for another life that fits in with the wishes of the field.
Right.
We have to be brave, don't we? If we're bringing up our children, we have to be brave enough to make choices for them, to allow them to explore alternatives.
Absolutely.
To explore an alternative way of living, to be okay with the concept that they are more than they appear to be. And we don't do that. We just tend to fit in.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're ever going to change things, we have to stop fitting in materially, physically, and we have to start fitting in spiritually.
Right.
And when we connect with our true spiritual selves, we find that we're not fitting in according to a dictate. We're fitting in because that's what we are.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing that can bring us bliss. That's the only thing that can bring us enlightenment and a way forward.
Right.
And all these things are waiting for us, but we've got to take that time and we've got to address society and ourselves from a different viewpoint.
Well, absolutely. You know, I was when you're talking about the school across the street from you, how weird I have a school right down the street from me. I got to tell you, I hate the sound of the buses going by. But when I was teaching many years ago, when I was teaching a program here in Arizona on which all the children, all the schools had to go to as part of a field trip, which was basically how to learn about the desert so kids could survive. You know, they had different things, the plants, the animals, this, that. I taught the history of the Hohokam, the natives that lived here. So you got all ages coming through this center. You never knew which class was coming in next. But what I did notice after doing that, I probably did that for maybe a year or two, I don't even remember. By the fourth grade, the children were duplicates of their parents in every way. So the indoctrination was complete by the fourth grade, where children are usually 9 years old. When I had the younger kids in my section, they were fantastic. Their imaginations were wide open. Their curiosity was wide open. Their spirituality was wide open. But what I noticed was by the fourth grade, they were like little clones of society.
They've been beaten out of them, yes.
It was very sad. I mean, I really enjoyed the second graders, but man, when they said the fourth graders were coming, I was wishing I was home.
Yes. And of course, there's a tendency, if children are spiritually aware, if they quite naturally see spirit people and hear spirit people, to say, don't be silly, that's your imagination.
Right.
Or, don't be silly, people will think you're strange. And instead of nurturing and helping to develop that facility and that gift that can therefore help mankind, it's taken out of them. They're told that it's not proper. They shouldn't do that. It's only their imagination. And in many cases, that facility then closes down. And as it closes down, they then believe that it was indeed their imagination, and they shouldn't investigate that aspect of their personality because it's childish,
right.
And it dies. And so many opportunities to bring through communication from higher spheres are snuffed out by the fact that we tell our children not to see people, not to sense spiritual aspects of life, not to have visions, not to talk to people that they can see but others can't.
Right.
And that's very sad as well.
Of course, they tell them that that's crazy, that's lunacy.
Yes.
So they put you down from the minute you start actually seeing reality.
Yes.
And I've been there, believe me, I've been there many times.
Yes.
When you go to, I was re-looking through From Here to Infinity, and I was on a radio show out of the UK about a month or so ago, Michael, and the host said to me, what do you say to people who tell you that your show is just preaching to the choir? And I think I surprised him with my answer because I said, I'm only interested in the choir. I said, my show is a safe space for my soul group. It's a safe space for people who think like me. They need to know there's safety. There is somebody out there speaking for them. And I recall in From Here to Infinity where you talk about the importance of circles of like-minded people, which of course struck me since I teach the medicine wheel, which is a circle within a circle.
Yeah.
So, you know, people out there feel all alone, but they're never alone. Go ahead. Yeah, well, that was the other part, you know, because I think this was probably in the same chapter where, you know, no one's ever alone.
Yeah.
But, the importance of circles of like-minded people. I'm sure you feel the same way. I mean, I don't want to be attacked by people that are totally closed down and programmed and you're not going to change it. I want to give safety and information to people who actually are open and want it.
Yes, and it looks as though we're being elitist and we're not. You can only put across this information to people who are ready to receive it.
Right.
You could transmit it all day to a person who is not ready to receive it and put forward the perfect argument for spirituality and the perfect argument for us being spiritual beings who never die and move on into increasingly beautiful spheres of creation and being, and they would not see that information. They would not accept that information. The way to bring the information to the whole world is to first of all link to as many people as possible who are doing the same thing, is to acknowledge through those people, through that group of souls, what you intend to do. And as you lift those people up and lift yourself up, you create more light, you create a situation in which the people who were not ready for the information begin to accept the information, begin to at least examine the information.
Mm-hmm.
We can't elevate a single person without elevating everybody else because we're all linked. We're all part of the same thing.
Right.
But you have to address that part of the same thing that is ready to acknowledge the light.
Right.
And in acknowledging the light, those people transmit enough light to bring up the people who formerly have not been ready for the information.
Well said. You know, while you were saying that, it brought me in my mind. You know how my mind jumps around in crazy places, Michael. Years ago, you know, there were a lot of places in town. I'm sure it still happens around the country or maybe even where you are, where you would hold psychic fairs. You know,
yes,
you might have 10 tables of, you know, fairly new psychics, whatever, trying to get their feet wet, whatever. You know, maybe 20, 25 bucks. You get a little 10-minute read. You're on your way. And somebody said to me, you know, what did I think of that? Because they were kind of putting it down. And I said to them, I said, first of all, you know, back in the day, I did that for fun. But I mean, I got a lot of money to do it because I only did it through top resorts. But I said, for a lot of people, those little psychic fairs is their first introduction to anything spiritual.
Yes.
So whether those psychics were the best or the worst, I said they're opening a door for people, because people will go to something like that for fun. They'll think it's fun or curiosity or whatever, but a lot of those people will eventually find your books, Michael. They will eventually work with somebody like me. But they have to start somewhere. And what you're saying, you know, what you just said, you know, reminded me of that for whatever reason.
Yeah, there has to be that chink. There has to be that point at which there is that soul change and somebody examines the possibility. And they may have a reading with someone, as you said. There might be two or three words within that reading that really shock them to their core.
Right.
And really convince them that there is something else going on other than what they can sense with their physical senses. And in that sense, as you say quite rightly, it's a beginning. It's a start point.
Right.
It's an opening up on the journey that leads to greater and greater spiritual awareness.
Mm.
It's unfortunate that that's perhaps only the only venue that they've got at the moment to investigate initially whether there is anything other than physical life, than physical existence. Because we don't acknowledge our spiritual workers in the same way that we acknowledge the workers in our established religions.
Mm-hmm.
We elevate many of the workers in our established religions, and we look to them for the spiritual way, but that doesn't happen with spiritual workers very often, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
And yet spiritual workers work every bit as hard, if not harder, than many of the established representatives of many of the established religions.
Right, and I think they care about people more as well. Let's not leave that out. But I do want to get a little codicil to my listeners. If any of you out there are thinking of checking out a psychic fair, and you sit across a woman who tells you her dog is giving her the information, you probably want to go to a different table.
Yes.
Michael, believe it or not, there was this old lady in the valley, and she had this little tiny black poodle, and she said it was her dog doing the readings, and I was like, oh my God. So kind of use a little discretion while you're out there. If they tell you, you know, you got a curse on your head and, you know, for a couple of $1,000, they'll take it off. Get away from them. Or go watch the video on my site on how to detect a psychic fraud. That's on the page with, that was one, everybody loved that lecture. I must have given that lecture 1,000 times, Michael. So go to the consultation page, the video's there. So you have to be careful. But, you know, when you think about it, they usually have a table with crystals. They'll usually have a table with a lot of spiritual books. And for a lot of people, that's their first introduction to crystals. So, you know, there is a purpose for everything, and there's different levels. You can't come across people talking about the things we're talking about in the same manner as one of these born-again Christians that nobody wants to be cornered with, you know, especially if they're drinking and they're going to ram that religion down your throat. So you have to, it's not so much what you say, but how you say it.
Yes, and if anybody's going to a psychic fair or it's their first taste of anything that is above their normal life, as they see it, they should wait to feel the pull. If they can't decide who to go to, wait to feel the pull. Wait to see a person that interests them for some reason, that they feel drawn towards. Mm-hmm. And then, as you say, be discerning. There's a lot of nonsense, unfortunately, in the area in which we work.
Oh, yeah.
Because it allows nonsense because it's nebulous. It can't be measured on a physical scale. And so they have to be discerning. And it can be a minefield, as we both know, because in the early stages of seeking spirituality, because you want to seek spirituality and you think that the people that you're looking at are all experts, you can swallow the most extraordinary stories.
Right.
Again, this is why also in tandem with seeking outwards spiritually, you have to seek inwards.
Absolutely.
You have to learn meditation, that ugly word for many people, because they think it's so complicated when it's not. And through meditation, you have to think, what I'm being told, does that connect with what I feel inside? Is this the right story? Is this the wrong story? Is this a truth for me? Or is this just nonsense? And they have to learn to be discerning as part of their spiritual journey.
Absolutely. Michael, we have to take a short break. Stay with us. Michael and I will be right back.
Spiritual professor is a name some of Maria's students and clients refer to her as. After a consultation or class with Maria, some have gone as far as calling her the Force or the Oracle. Maria is simply a woman, a mother, and grandmother who was born with a keen natural intuition. She's got a lot of life experience and she's a constant student herself. This is what qualifies her to help those who are on their journey and need some direction. Some students visit her in person, others on the phone or on Skype. Maria will work with you on your own timeline, guiding you down your best possible path. You can learn to balance the mind, body, and spirit in what seems to be a world gone mad. As David Icke says about Maria, Maria's the real deal, extremely intuitive but with her feet firmly on the ground, out there, but down here, no bullshit. Whatever you need in this part of your journey is what Maria will help you with. She'll give you the tools you need to make the rest of your life the best of your life. See private consultations with Maria on the site at meria.net and pick the one that resonates with you. You are not alone. The professor is in at meria.net. Now back to the show.
Okay, welcome back to The Bigger Picture with myself and Michael Rakia. You can check out his work at josephspeaks.com. We're kind of touching on a few of his books. I do know, Michael, that you're just completing a lot of audiobooks there. You've been working yourself out.
Yes. I thought I'd better do this while I've still got the voice to do it, Maria.
That's a good idea.
My attitude is that, you know, if I can do it today, I must do it today. And so I'm working with a great sound engineer called Avi once a week to record an average of three chapters a week of each book. And we have Revelation, Illumination, and The Fall available as audiobooks now.
Good.
And we're into From Here to Infinity at the moment. We do intend to produce all six books. And that might sound a bit strange because, of course, we've got Transmission in the middle, which is a transcript of all the public trance demonstrations that we did.
Right.
But I thought it would be quite nice to recreate that atmosphere. And so we will do that with sound as though you are actually at those trance demonstrations. We're recreating them, in other words.
Oh.
Obviously, without me going into trance, I will be repeating what Joseph said during those sessions.
Right.
But that is such a huge book that we are going to split that into two audiobooks because it will take up so much time.
I would assume
recording time.
Well, good. So all of these books and audiobooks are now available on your site?
Yes, there are links via our site. You'll also find them on Amazon and iTunes. And we will just keep pushing them out because once they're out, they're out. The mission to record them is done.
Right.
I can breathe easy for a couple of days.
I know the feeling of getting something done and then feeling so relieved, believe me.
Yes.
Okay, yesterday I had another spiritual woman on the show. She's quite good, Monica yes. Sepulveda. I have her on once a month. I don't know if you've gotten a chance to hear us yet, Michael.
We gave out
a lot of useful tools, and so far the reviews coming in this morning are outrageous, better than I expected, to tell you the truth. So we kind of taught a little bit about color and sound therapy and the kind of words have power. And I thought, well, we can do something similar today because in From Here to Infinity, you talk about and show how to create your home into a fortress of light.
Yes, by building light into it. I think the term home applies to your actual physical dwelling place, but it also, it's a fortunate term for your own physicality as well.
Right.
Because you are inhabiting a home, and then you are within that home of your physical body. And it's important, again, we're down to meditation, that you put light into your house, that you elevate your vibrations, and that you make sure that nothing below that vibrational level can get in to disturb you. You need to do that with your body as well on a regular basis. Because as you become more aware psychically, you will notice at times that if you look at your body psychically, there are areas around your body where you can see, for example, a black cloud or a grey cloud or something that looks like a tick or a mite or an insect or something like that. And you think, what on earth's that? That's my imagination. Well, actually, it's not, because we attract thought forms. In our lower moments, in our depressed moments, in our sad moments, in our grieving moments,
mm-hmm.
These thought forms that humanity as a whole has created and which exist within the field of human consciousness are actually attracted to us and can attach themselves to us and can drain energy from us. And so we have to look at our body as a vessel of light and see those areas where we feel there's something not quite right. And then what I do is to blast those areas with enough white light that the darkness, the greyness, disappears.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to do that with our homes as well. If we've had somebody in the house that we feel disturbed about, then we have to look psychically at our house to see whether the levels of light are what they should be in our house. And if they're not, then we have to inject light into each room until we've literally chased out the darkness.
Right. Well, you know, there's other ways of doing that too, because, you know, when I was reading that, I said, wow, that's a good shortcut. But a lot of times people can smudge their house, you know, take some sacred herb and smudge your house.
Yes, indeed.
Clear that energy out. They can, you know, what you said is a real easy way, by the way, to cleanse your chakras by just blasting them with white light. But a lot of people, you know, they'll Reiki their house. You know, there's certain symbols in Reiki that you can use for clearing, especially negative energy. And, you know, people need to be aware that you should do this in your car, too.
Yes, indeed. Anywhere where you link with people that you are not completely harmonious with, you need to clear that space. And I think we spoke about hotel rooms the last time we got together, Maria. And it's very important that if you're going, you're staying on holiday somewhere, that you cleanse the room before you go into it. You can cleanse it remotely before you actually visit the place you're visiting and make sure that that light has cleansed from that room all traces of other people's thoughts, not necessarily thoughts from spirits from other levels of reality, but thoughts from spirits in physical form. Because in any hotel room, you've got this through flow of people with a variety of things on their minds,
right,
and a variety of agendas, not all of them good and not all of them positive and not all of them light-filled. And of course, they are sleeping in a bed and emanating those vibrations into a bed that you subsequently will sleep in.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to make sure that you are protected and in the light at all times. And also it's useful if your mood switches suddenly and you're somewhere, whether it's your own house or whether you're in a hotel room or in a city somewhere, to understand that although it feels like you that's having this experience, you may not be the originator of that experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, it's back into meditation to see whether you've picked something up that has lowered your vibrational rate and lowered your outlook and to treat it with light accordingly. I mean, we were talking as we came into the show about the ailments that we are suffering from at the moment. And I'm sure you're treating your ailments with light, and so am I.
Right.
And I can look at my body, as I'm sure you can, and I can see where the energy is flowing and where it isn't flowing. I can see where there are any dark spots, and therefore can concentrate in meditation that light through those dark spots, to dispel those dark spots, and restore my physical body to normal operating procedures.
Right. Well, you know, I also use my Reiki. I just Reiki myself. If I'm too busy to hold my foot too long, I'll just send myself the Reiki as I would to send some to you. Do you know what I mean? Because you talk about in this book, basically, that sometimes it's easier to heal someone else when they're not even present.
Yes, because you have you're not up against their attitude towards the illness. With the best will in the world, we invest in the illnesses we've got. We reinforce them, and it's a danger. So someone will come to you, and they're holding on to the illness. Mm-hmm. They have given it a presence. They have given it a weight. They have given it an authority. And so, if you're sitting directly to heal them, you've got to combat their investment in that illness. Whereas, if they're, you know, they're in the garden somewhere by themselves or taking a walk down a street and you are healing them remotely, they're not aware that they're being healed at that time. So they have the illness has a looser hold on them, and you are able to more effectively transmit the light that they need to restore the balance in their various bodies.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's you know, these are all important tips because, you know, when you said, you know, when you have a bad or your mood changes right away, you know, maybe it's not you. And I'll tell you what, a lot of my friends and a lot of my clients will tell me, you know, they wake up feeling great and then they came home feeling like crap, whether they went to a movie, dinner, whatever. And I tell them, well, you're probably walking around with your chakras wide open, okay?
Yeah.
And people don't realize that they can cleanse that energy, need to do it every day in this crazy world, maybe twice a day, and then seal it when you go out in public. And there are easy ways to learn how to do that. Because I don't think that everybody that throws a drain on somebody else does it deliberately. I think they just see somebody with a real life force and they just want some of it.
Yes, at a subconscious level. These are not evil people. They simply have a need, and subconsciously they see that you can fulfill that need. And as you say, yes, it's very easy to open the chakras, particularly when you're working spiritually, particularly when you're sending light out into the world. They open automatically. So it's essential that at the end of your meditations, you close down those chakras and you seal those chakras and say, right, I don't need to use you in that way until I'm ready to again. So let's remain closed. So, you know, that they're a two-way gate. They send out energy, but they take in energy too. And if there is a lesser energy around, then we can absorb that. And the result is that we become depressed or ill or upset and frightened, and we don't know why. It's very useful to always examine why we feel as we feel.
Right.
As you say, you get up in the morning and you feel fine, and then suddenly you don't feel fine. It's not necessarily because there's some imbalance in your physical system.
Mm-hmm.
It's very often because you have picked up from this field of thoughts that is around us all the time. We're in this soup of thoughts all the time.
In the soup,
and
all right.
And people are sent... Sorry, Maria.
I said we're in the soup, all right.
We certainly are in the soup.
I don't mean to laugh. Maybe I'm losing my mind, you know, after so much of this stuff for so long.
Yeah.
But we are in the soup. And
yes,
I got to tell you, even when I reread how we're, you know, the field is running out of time, I almost take joy in that. It's like, it's like, oh my God, how much more of this is going to happen? How much more of this do we have to take? But you and I have already discussed that in the past. But
yes,
I would think the field's got to be shrinking pretty fast at what's been happening just in the past 6 months.
You can feel it. There are certain steps, and I'm sure you feel it too. There are certain days where you think, oh, we've taken a turn for the worse here. You know, we better send out as much light as we can.
Uh-huh.
You can feel the change in vibration, and the change in vibration in our lifetime has altered so drastically from what we knew as youngsters. And that's not nostalgia. You can talk to anyone, and they will say the same thing.
Uh-huh.
That it has changed. The way that people are has changed. The world has speeded up and continues to speed up. Mm-hmm. And we invest so much time in our technology and so much time in rushing around and practically no time in our spirituality, no time in seeking harmony, no time in seeking that which we are and that which comes next. And we owe it to ourselves to do so. And I feel sorry for the younger people who are so embedded, so enmeshed in the technological speed of the world.
Right.
You know, and if there are any young people listening to the show, I would say, please, for your own sake, just take time to be quiet every day, sometime, even if it's only a few minutes. Mm-hmm. Learn to grow that silence. Learn to be in that silence. And you will be surprised what comes to you, the thoughts that come to you, the feelings, the sensations, and the energy that comes to you.
Right.
Simply by taking some time off from this world, it's vitally important.
Right. Absolutely. What do they say? The quieter you get, the more you learn.
Yes.
I mean, for most people, I mean, if you sit back and you think, you know, you could have been pondering a situation forever. And then all of a sudden, you know, you get quiet. And when you're least even thinking about it, you have your eureka moment. It's only when you're quiet, I think, that you can really hear the voice of spirit.
Yes, and your own spiritual voice, the voice of your own spiritual core. Because in all situations, we know what to do. At heart, we know what to do. We don't in mind, but we do at heart. And seeking the silence means that we're also seeking our own counsel. And as you say, you quite rightly say, in the silence, out of nowhere pops a solution or a plan of action,
right,
or some inspiration that helps us with the challenges in our lives. And it's essential. And it takes the power back from society, and it takes the power back from the field, and it plants that power firmly where it belongs, which is within ourselves.
Mm.
We are powerful, creative, spiritual, angelic beings. We have the answers. And if we don't have the answers, we know somebody who has,
right,
you know, through our spiritual meditations. And that's a wonderful freeing way to live, to be free of choices except our own choices,
mm-hmm,
not the choices of society that give us no choice.
No, and I mean, you know, like I said, you know, like we started out earlier, you know, the programming starts as soon as you're awake on this planet.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean you have to follow it. I mean, look at how many people now are into, you know, arguing. I'm sure you saw all the protests in Italy against mandatory vaccination.
Yes.
And, you know, the Italians aren't just sitting back like Americans are and allowing that. So you can always make that choice. But you have to be capable of thinking for yourself, and you have to be able to break away from the programming.
Yes, the capable of thinking outside of the box being the box that contains the field, and strong enough to stand up for yourself and to stand up for spiritual values. You know, as we've said, you are programmed by life from an early age, and we become timid about making a noise or making a difference or running in a different direction than the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to be brave in this. We have to be brave to change things. We have to be brave to change the world, to change thinking. Because if we don't do it, who will?
Exactly. That's the God honest truth. So it's interesting when you were talking about, you know, the quiet, and sometimes, you know, I find for myself that when I let go of something is when the answer comes in. And
yeah,
it could be the next day or a day, you know, 2 days later. You know, it's like years ago when I got this rash on my belly. I wasn't sure what it was. I was too lazy to look it up. It wasn't anything too terrible. And then I sat and I was watching a movie. And in the middle of the movie, it was like somebody screamed the word shingles at me. And I said, shingles, what's that? And I stopped the movie and went over to Google it. And sure enough, it looked exactly like the rash I had. And that's the way it happens. You know, sometimes it's not going to happen. It doesn't come in on demand. It comes in when you're actually quiet or your mind's not paying attention.
And yes, you make the demand and the universe talks to you. Divinity talks to you. The real you talks to you. We just have to be open to receiving that message. As you say, very often you'll be watching the television and some actor or actress will say a sentence that stops you in your tracks. Because it's exactly the answer that you've been seeking. Or you'll read a newspaper and that sentence is in there. Or you'll have that eureka moment as you're walking along and know what to do. But we have to give access to those thoughts. And we give access to those thoughts by spending time in silence and by spending time in meditation and contemplation. There's no other way. It's not an enemy, it's a friend. When we start doing this, we quickly learn that it's a very beneficial way of life and that it changes our life for the better.
Absolutely. And, you know, you have to slow down in order for that to happen. You know, everybody's in such a rush, you know, when you're talking about time speeding up. You know, I don't like to be one of those people like the generation before us when they talk about how better it was when they were young. Because I think every generation said that. But the truth of the matter is, ours actually was. And if you look at the 50s compared to 2000s, you got to say to yourself, in the 50s, we were moving at 50 miles an hour. But in 2000, everything's moving at 2,000 miles an hour.
Yes, yes.
And you have to be able to slow
it. Isolated.
Right.
It's much more isolated than we ever were.
Right.
We might have greater means of communication, but we're communicating less.
Right. Well, we have social media. But it's media, but there's no real sociability. I mean, I find that most people don't even talk on their phones anymore. All they want to do is text. They don't even want to orally talk to the person next to them.
Yeah. And there's no connection with the world either. You see people bent over their phones and they don't notice where they are, whether they're passing people, whether they're in the countryside. So they are trapped within the illusion of the earth and then within a further illusion of the technology, which is very frightening.
I know.
Exactly what the field wants.
It's crazy. It's illusion inside of illusion. Well, Michael, thanks for joining me today.
A great pleasure, Maria.
And I'll talk to you next time, and you feel better. I'll be sending you some Reiki with your permission.
Oh, that's wonderful. You'll be in our thoughts as well. You take care, Maria.
You
God
too.
Bless.
Bye. Michael.
Bye-bye.
Michael Rakia, his work, josephspeaks.com, still the purest, most informative spiritual work in books I've seen in forever. Okay, tomorrow I'll be back with news of Planet of the Apes, and I'll try to entertain you through it. And I want to thank you for supporting the show. I'm sure yesterday and today's show was a nice breather for all of us. So whatever you're doing later, get a little silent and give yourself a few minutes to meditate. I'll see you guys tomorrow.
Thank you for listening and supporting The Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.